is explained by some to be the result of karma. Others say it is due to nature, others due to time, others due to fate, and still others say that it is due to desire. Purport. There are different types of philosophers, Mimamsakas, atheists, astronomers, sexualists, and so many other classifications of mental speculators. The real conclusion is that it is our work only that binds us within this material world in different varieties of life. How these varieties have sprung up is explained in the Vedas. It is due to the desire of the living entity. The living entity is not a dead stone. He has different varieties of desires or karma. The Vedas say, kamo karashit. The living entities are originally parts of the Lord, like sparks of a fire, but they have dropped to this material world, attracted by a desire to lord it over nature. That is a fact. Every living entity is trying to lord it over the material resources to the best of his ability. This karma or desire cannot be annihilated. There are some philosophers who say that if one gives up his desires, he again becomes liberated. But it is not at all possible to give up desire, for desire is a symptom of the living entity. If there were no desire, then the living entity would be a dead stone. Srila Narottamdas Thakur therefore advises that one turn his desire towards serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then desire becomes purified. And when one's desires are purified, one becomes liberated from all material contamination. The conclusion is that the different philosophers' theories to explain the varieties of life and their pleasure and pain are all imperfect. The real explanation is that we are eternal servants of God, and that as soon as we forget this relationship, we are thrown into the material world, where we create our different activities and suffer or enjoy the results. We are drawn into this material world by desire, but the same desire must be purified and employed in the devotional service of the Lord. Then our disease of wandering in the universe under different forms and conditions will end. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutale Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine. Namaste Sarasate Devam Gauravani Pracharine Nirvashesha Shunyavari Paskatyate Shatarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kechit kanama vadantyenam svabhavam apare nripa ekke kalam pare daivam bhungsakamam utapare. Translation. The differentiation among varieties of life and their suffering and enjoyment is explained by some to be the result of karma. Others say it is due to nature, others due to time, others due to fate, and still others say that it is due to desire. Once there was an old lady who had a wonderful young son. sun. It so happened that the sun went into the forest and was bitten by a deadly snake. However, one hunter observed how the sun died, and by his expert arrangements, he was able to capture the snake alive and brought it before the mother of the sun. "Here, I have brought you the evildoer. I want to kill him before your eyes so that you can have revenge. Revenge is sweet." However, the old lady said, "No, please, you don't know. The snake is not the ultimate cause of my son's death." "What?" said the hunter. "I've seen how he, that snake, bit your son and how he was dying in the bloom of his youth. How can you say the snake is not the cause?" "Well," said the lady, "I have a feeling some other cause is there." So by that time, the snake, who was a speaking snake, had come back to, he was not killed by the hunter, but he gained enough strength to speak. He said, "Yes, what the lady says is right. I have not been the cause of your son's death. It is death itself who has to be punished, if someone is there to be punished." So the lady said, "Well, yes, here the snake also says it is not the cause." "No, no," said this the hunter, "this is all... he killed your son." So death was summoned. The lady said, "My dear death, you come and explain the situation to the hunter." So the death came, and he said, "Yes, it is true. Actually, I'm the cause of... I could be called to be the cause of your son's death, but... it was his time to die. So if there is someone to be blamed, it is not me, the death, it is time itself who has to be blamed." So time was summoned. The hunter was standing by, and it was all growing over his head. I think one says like this in English. So time said, "No. Ultimately, it is also not me, because I am ordered by fate." It's like here you see all these arguments are all brought. Others say it is due to nature, which could be called death. Others due to time. Others due to fate. So, finally, the lady said, "I don't also think that fate is the ultimate cause of my son's death. As far as I can understand, it is karma. It is the karma of my son to have been killed by the snake. It is so therefore it is not right, dear hunter, if you kill the snake, because it is karma who is the ultimate cause. Now, karma can't be punished because we ourselves are the cause of the karma. And I must admit, I myself feel responsible to be part, I'm sharing part of the karma of my son because I brought him up in a certain way." So, this is the final judgment on this complicated issue. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to this text, also refutes all these other causes. He says it's not nature, not time, not fate, which is responsible for the enjoyments and sufferings of the living entities. It is their own fruitive activity and their own karma which is to be held responsible. This opens up the discussion this morning to a quite interesting story which is told in the Mahabharata. On his way back to Florida, no, back to Los Angeles, His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj stayed for a couple of days in our temple in Heidelberg, and by my sweet tongue and sweet smile, I was able to capture the translation of Mahabharata from him, which he did so far. You will be glad to hear that the Mahabharata, that he will go into seclusion for 3 or 5 years and just translate the Mahabharata, and Vishnupad's sentient press will print it, because he's the most efficient printer in this world, so to say. So this is a beautiful translation, and since we are discussing karma, I want to tell one story from this Mahabharata about one saint called Mandavya Muni, or Manduka Muni. As you all know from the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is one purport in the first canto, where Srila Prabhupada explains how Yamaraj, the god of dharma and the god of death, was taking birth as a human being. Just to call the incidents back into your memory, I want to explain it a little longer, since this makes a very interesting point for today's discussion. It goes like this, that once Mandavya Muni, or Manduka Muni in the Mahabharata, his second name is given, Mandavya Muni, was meditating. He performed severe austerities by standing on one leg, when all of a sudden, three people who were actually thieves came to his place, and they asked him for permission and then took shelter within his little hut. So a little later, the police constables of the king came and asked Mandavya Muni whether or not he had seen three thieves. Now Mandavya Muni didn't know that these people were thieves, and so he didn't really answer. He also had no time. He was in this severe austerity, standing there on one leg, hands raised to the sky. So they looked into the cottage, found the thieves, and thought the saint actually was also a thief. He was a complice. I think it's called in English. Complice. Yes, complice. So they also took him, and they punished him severely. They took a lance, and they actually pierced it through his body. I do not know if you know this art. It's like Count Dracula also used it. He would put people on his on their behind and just throw them on a I don't know, a stick. It was like a stick, a pointed stick. And it's very painful, but you don't die immediately. You hang around for some time and you scream, ah! And it's very horrible. You suffer a very slow death, not fast. It is not at all agreeable, an agreeable form of dying. So Mandavya Muni, he was there, and because he was a tyagi, he had full control over his senses, and he didn't actually experience so much of a pain. He was continuing his austerities and his meditations, and he was just hanging for weeks on this shaft, or the English word is not lens, like a lens, yeah, but not as a small time lens, a really thick one. Ein Pfahl, Pfählen, sagt man. What? A pole, that's the word. He was, you know, just situated in position of this pole, which was in his body and in his belly. So after some time, the king thought, well, he's not dying. What is this? This is not an ordinary thief. He must be a tyagi, a renunciant. And he went, and they wanted to take the pole out of him. But it somehow stuck. And they just could cut the wood, and the pole was always in his body. So therefore he became known as a saint with the pole inside the body. So Mandavya Muni really didn't feel so offended, but he just thought, why? I mean, I was engaged in saintly life, and he actually came before Dharmaraj or Yamaraj and asked him, now, I think you have committed a mistake. See, I'm a tyagi, I have been pious all this while, and you are taking, you who administer the sufferings of the living entity, you have brought me in such a terrible situation. Where is your sense of religion? Where is your justice? I think you have made a cruel mistake. I personally have no admiration for this activity of yours. So Dharmaraj said, no, it's not that you are innocent. As a little child, you have taken a pointed straw and you have killed an ant with it, and therefore you are suffering like this. This is the explanation. Keshava looks very attentive. Yes, it is a fact. This shouldn't be done. even for play, we should not torture animals. That's why, explained Dharmaraj, that's why you had to take this sinful reaction and you had to be tortured like this. So Dharmaraj said, so Mandavya Muni said, I can't accept this. This is not justice. I was a mere child. I didn't know what I was doing, even if I had done such a thing. I think you have been over penible, overly exact, and you have to take now a birth in the human form of life. I curse you to become Vidura. That's how Dharmaraj was cursed to take a form, a human form, and let me see, and also be born from a Shudrani, as a Sudra girl, not a very exalted birth. And Mandavya Muni made another thing which is important, I think, to hear for the teachers and for of our Gurukuls. Mandavya Muni said, and another thing is, no one shall suffer karma up to the age of 14. And that's why children up to the age of 14 are not held responsible by the laws of karma for their mischief. Now, this shouldn't be misused by Keshava and company. Not that they think now I'm getting wild like anything, you know, I will just throw over tables and throw tomatoes on the teachers. This is, of course, not what should be the consequence from all this. So, karma is not there for children under 14. This is at least the statement of the Mahabharata. So, otherwise, the rules of karma are very strict and very, very stringent. Strict and stringent, I think, is the same expression, almost. So that's one thing which I wanted to make, one point which I made it wanted to make. Now, this Prabhupada makes another very interesting point, and he says that the varieties of the living entities have sprung up due to desire, to come due to karma. It is karma without an R means desire. It is a desire which is at the root of all activities. First, it is explained like this. First, you think of something, then you feel for that thought, and finally, you wish it to take place. And then only you can act. We in Krishna consciousness, we know about this. This philosophical point is made in the Narada Pancharatra. We know, and therefore we try to hear about Krishna so that we can think about Krishna and feel for Krishna and also desire Krishna and in this way go back to him. Now, everything which we hear produces a thought, and the thoughts again finally manifest into a certain desire which become manifest into an activity. This is a very important point for all the devotees to understand. And we in Krishna consciousness do not just practice physical hygiene, hygienic principles. We also practice mental hygienic hygienic principles. And in a few days, and a few tomorrow, starting from tomorrow, for 3 days, we will hear from Bhakti Charu Maharaj a little bit about Vaishnav etiquette, and hear about what we can do in order to practice mental hygienic principles, that our mind stays pure, and in this way, no dirty desires, no material desires spring up. If you consider the subtleties of desires, you cannot help but be awestruck. Every one of us with his body, Finnish body, Swedish body, German body, and hobgoblin body. Okay, I think in Alnwick there are a few trolls also living. Are stationed within this material body due to desire. Our nose is the way it is. Our arms are long. As long as they are, our feet are smelly. All our physical characteristics are based on the subtle form of desire. Desire is such a thing, it carries an information, like someone desires to do this or that, and this information, by the laws of nature, is translated, when the karma is mature, into a physical manifestation. This is how the subtle laws of material nature function. Everything manifests from a subtle plane manifests from a subtle plane. This is an interesting thing. So therefore, a devotee must be very, very careful that his desires are transformed into Krishna consciousness. Here I want to give another story, because today is a day of stories. It is about Danudhara, the wrestler. He had a beautiful girlfriend and once was in the midst of a religious ceremony. Deities were carried on a procession with elephants, and I remember there were oxen who carried big drums, and the drumming was going, and the shanais were playing, it was a great festival. People came from their houses, brought forth wonderful preparations of Utsukt Martin, they came with, there were conchals blowing and chamaras flying. It was a huge scene. However, Danudhara was just walking beside his girlfriend, who was carried on a palanquin. He just looked at her eyes, and he didn't even notice what was going on around him. He was in love. So this petitious scene was thought, Ramanujacharya, Yatiraj means the king of the renunciants. And he was very much shocked to see this and called Danudhara over and said, Why are you so in love? You don't even see this ceremony. Why I'm so much after this girl, said Danuda. It is extremely easy to explain. She has the most beautiful eyes in the universe. That's the reason. Oh, said Ramanujacharya, what if I show you eyes which are more beautiful than those girls' eyes? Well, I probably will fall in love with that girl. Okay, so come at 7 o'clock before the temple. Danuda came and Ramanuja went down into through the different Gopuras. He was going finally to the altar where the wonderful Lord Ranganath was lying down on Sheshanag. And since this is a Vedic temple, no electricity was used. Well, at that time I think there was no electricity. Only natural light was used. So when the pujari came with his lamp, the light fell into the beautiful reddish eyes of the deities, and the eyes sparkled in a very nice way. When he saw those eyes of the Lord looking at him intensely, he fainted. He saw there was nothing more beautiful, and he became a god lover. He became a very nice disciple, and he became very renounced even in his Grihastha life. Therefore, Ramanujacharya always discussed with him in great detail, much to the wonder and protest of his sannyas disciples. So one day, Ramanujacharya decided to show his disciples the greatness of this Danudhara, who had also converted his most beautiful wife. when his sannyas disciples were taking were sleeping, he went to their dhotis and took this much, ripped this much cloth away from their dhotis. So in the morning they all came and wanted to put on that. It was too short. You rascal! I knew you have stolen a kopin. You have ripped a kopin from my dhoti. Because you always do not like my dhoti. You think I have a very special dhoti. I know. If I would look underneath your dhoti, I would see it. No! I'm not stealing from you. I'm not ripping from my kopin from anywhere. But here, see? My dhoti is too short. You have taken a kopin from my dhoti. And in this way they were fighting. So in the evening, Ramanujacharya asked one of his sannyas disciples, today I will show you the greatness of our Dhanudhara. What we should do is, I will entangle him in a long discussion on Krishna Katha. And then you go to his wife, who at that time is sleeping, and you steal her ornaments and her jewels from her. Let us see how he reacts. I do not know if this is custom in our Grihastha families, but in Vedic times, all the wealth of the family was on the woman. She had everywhere gold and jewels and ornaments. In Rajasthan, you can still see the women have golden rings. Yes, you must be familiar. They have everything, all the gold of the families there. So the disciples came